StoreYourHealthNow.com.
I hope you're enjoying what's left of 2011, and if you hated 2011, bring in the new year, baby. It's almost here. Kate Delaney, America Tonight. Happy, happy to you and yours, without a doubt. Truly, I mean that. I wish everyone the best in 2012, including all the people who are running. Have you seen the Iowa poll numbers? If you haven't, I got to get to them. Mitt Romney, 25%. Ron Paul crawling up his leg with 22%. And how about this Rick Santorum, 16%. Gingrich bringing in the back, so to speak, at 14%. This is the caucus, but this is the start of the real stuff. First the caucus, then the primaries, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and all the way down the line. What does it mean that Ron Paul gets now in Iowa a front runner's kind of applause and woohoo when he walks in the door? It means that people are excited about Ron Paul, and that's why I start there, because he's been in the news lately for all kinds of controversial things, but he's managing to shake it off and draw some big crowds and a surprise endorsement from Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann's now former state chairman. How about that? Interesting. January 3rd, of course, is the caucus. Former Senator Rick Santorum, who has been nothing but practically dead last or in a tie for it, has now gotten some momentum, and Newt Gingrich is losing his. As I mentioned, though, Mitt Romney sells the lead in the latest poll. That's what that means. Mitt Romney began his campaign by de-emphasizing the state of Iowa, and now he might finish on top, according to the latest polls. And this is a poll of polls where we're scrambling all the numbers together, too, by the way. CNN did one, and they came up with those specific numbers. So Ron Paul or Mitt Romney, Paul is the 76-year-old libertarian-leaning Texas man with very slight draw. There's not much of a draw in his voice. And he's starting to draw people at the Iowa State Fairgrounds. A lot of people showed up, wanted to talk to him. And there was even some interruptions with the nutball people in the back claiming to be part of the Occupy movement, screaming things out. But that didn't seem to stop Ron Paul, who continued to roll on. Mitt Romney, as I said, leading a lot of the polls, but he's the establishment guy, and he's been there all along. He's never dipped really, really low. He talked about something that I think all of us should be concerned about, even though we're talking about the Middle East again. I think we have to be concerned about what's happening in Iran with the Strait of Hormuz, whether or not they're going to block it as far as the traffic in that shipping channel is concerned, because it will block up a lot of that crude oil that we, frankly, end up putting into our cars once it goes through the processing and is refined. So, yes, we get the bulk of our oil from Canada, but not all of it. And more to the point, here Iran is again threatening, not liking the sanctions and saying, ah, screw it, we'll just close the shipping lanes. How can we, and how can other countries, certainly in Europe, they rely on a lot of what happens in the Middle East, oil-wise, for their supplies. How can we allow this guy to just be, meaning Ahmadinejad, the bully that he is, and continue to say, we're closing you down, we're shutting you off? Now, some people think that we should be diplomatic and have conversations with Iran. That's Ron Paul's take. Mitt Romney looks at it a little bit differently. Here's what he had to say about Iran and military action.
For those that say, well, but the Soviet Union had a nuclear weapon, the difference is we had mutually assured destruction, and the Soviets were not suicidal. It's incumbent upon the President of the United States to recognize our interests and not to engage in military conflict unless absolutely essential and in the interest of the United States.
All right, so he does bring up the question but doesn't answer it. Is it absolutely essential to the United States or not? Essential or not? What's interesting is, remember I've talked about this before, what we're selling off, what we're dumping, some of those F-15s to the Saudis. So we're selling $30 billion worth of F-15 fighter jets. Who knows? They may need them based on what's going on in the Middle East at this point. It was a year ago that they got the go-ahead from Congress to get rid of the loot. You know, $60 billion arms deal, $60 billion deal with Saudi Arabia that included the F-15s I mentioned, helicopters, missiles, bombs, delivery systems, radar warning, night vision goggles, you name it, picnic baskets. No, just kidding about that. I don't know, maps, GPS, whatever. Throwing everything in. And, of course, why would they be arming up? Why would they want to do that? Concerned about what's going on in that region. Concerned about Israel. Concerned about Iran, even. And the upgrades are huge for 70... For these 84 new fighter jets and upgrades for 70 more, that is a very, very big number and something to pay attention to without a doubt. That did not slip under the radar. And it's something that I know we talked about several times, and it was a big clue as to what the concerns are, especially as you see what Iran's doing. It seems unlikely that they would force this hand to close the strait. But if they do man the torpedoes, I think that place has the potential to really explode if that's what happens. If they shut it down completely, it's just not going to be, okay, they're shutting it down, we're going to take our ball and go home. We don't have to play here. There will be difficulties without a doubt. Hey, coming up on the flip side here on America Tonight, what's going on in your world for New Year's Eve for 2012? It's a night where people all turn into amateurs, if there is such a thing, meaning they decide they're going to take this night to really tie one on, not give someone their keys, not have a designated driver, and then hit the highways. It's a night that a lot of cops don't like to deal with because they have to deal with belligerent people if they're lucky and they get them before they have to deal with some horrific accident. So maybe you've spent it on Times Square. Maybe you're listening to me in Connecticut or New York and you know what I'm talking about. I've done that once. I've been in New York several times for it, but I've only done the ball thing once where the ball drops down and, of course, everybody's watching to see what happens when we – that official we swung into another year is kind of a cool thing to witness at least once in your lifetime. But the problem is navigating all the people who are just crazy out of their minds, slammed, like I said, that amateur night thing. So who is the big act? We're going to talk about that next. Plus some goodbyes to some pretty well-known people in 2011. Who did we lose, so to speak? We'll take a look back at that, too, as well. Stay with us. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment frequent basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Good day, Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, December 28, 2011. Gold opened this morning at $1586.30. A 1 ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1626.19, $813.09 for a half ounce, or $406.55 for a quarter ounce. That's $1626.19, $813.09, and $406.55.
Gold isn't for you? Hi, I'm Ted Anderson, and I get it. You wouldn't buy gold if you believed the government is doing a great job. The Fed will stop handing out trillions like bailout candy, but that's not what's happening. If all looks rosy, then now is not the time to buy gold. For the realists, there have never been more sobering reasons to diversify. Since 2001, the U.S. dollar index has tanked while gold has risen 1,600%. Savvy investors are adding gold to their portfolios. Find out what they know. Call us and I'll send you 10 reasons why gold will do very well. Free. Call 800-686-2237. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Long-range patrol ration entrees. If you know survival, you know LRPs are the undisputed king of military rations. Hands down, the best for your bug-out bag or survival pack. To go farther, faster, and carry more food, there's nothing better than a brick pack LRP cold-weather ration entree. Nothing. Now, the freeze-dry guy is offering a limited-time deal on thousands of fresh LRP entrees. We're talking a menu of tasty and nutritious beef stew, chicken and rice, chili mac with beef, spaghetti and meat sauce with 20 entrees per case. These fresh 2011 LRPs are U.S. government contract overruns, perfect for long-term storage. But they're going fast at freezedryguy.com. Far superior to MREs, long-range patrol entrees are about a third the weight of an MRE, with about a third more meat than the finest commercial freeze-dried entrees. Ask about multi-case discounts and free shipping when you call 866-404-3663 today. That's 866-404-3663 or freezedryguy.com. Your source for survival food in an uncertain world.
Now, don't just walk away, pretending everything's okay, and you don't care about me. And I know it's just known you when all your life.
Happy New Year! Get those resolutions ready. How about this one? Don't buy any Chinese products. Nothing made in China, or at least cut down the amount. You might have a hard time. There are plenty of American-made things, but boy, you got to really dig for them. I was mentioning before about this Build-A-Bear controversy that 300,000, they're recalling them because kids are choking on the eyes of the bears. And where were Build-A-Bear? Where was all the stuff made? Of course, China. People go into these stores all over the United States and they think, oh, how cool, I'm making this bear. I don't think they're thinking they're using all the materials from China, but guess what? You are. Let's go to Izzy in Missouri. Hey, Izzy.
Hi, Kate. And by the way, before I forget, a very belated Merry Christmas. I know it's late, but I couldn't get through on the line.
Oh, you too. Did you have a good Christmas? Was it good?
I did. My twin surprised me, my oldest twin, and I was just, I'm like, oh, no.
Yeah, that's what it's about. That's what it's about.
I was not prepared. But anyway, and before I forget, Happy New Year.
You too.
To everybody. Well, I go to bed early, and I don't like drunks.
Oh, I agree.
A drunk broke my neck and back and changed my life, so I don't like drunks at all. Anyway, China, there's another recall product, chicken jerky.
Oh, really?
Yep. Came out in November, actually, but it's just now hitting, and it's making mostly dogs, it's for dogs, very ill in Australia, Canada, and the United States.
Oh.
So it is out there, and there is a recall. So if you are buying a product, chicken jerky, you might want to toss it because it's made in China. And, yeah, and they can't figure out what part of it is the causation, but dogs that have been eating this have been getting very ill and dying.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yep. Just keep buying that Chinese-made crap. Mm-hmm. But I have ordered now, to put my money where my mouth is, I have ordered from Alabama Wholesale Socks, because they only sell by the dozen lot.
Wow.
A dozen socks. Not only are they made in America, but they have free shipping. I'm also going to order a coat from Bruns. To see what they're like.
Right.
And if I can, if you don't mind, I'm going to ask him to donate one to the Nail the Score closet.
There you go. That would be good. Sure, sure. That's good. I think that's great. A dozen
socks. Well, I didn't want to do it without asking you, but
no.
You know, I thought, okay, I'm really on this. Well, I have been for a long time, made in America. So I decided some of the products that I can actually use, I'm buying from these companies, and everyone I have listed are made in America, not only made in America, but they offer free shipping.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alabama, the Montana Tool Company has free shipping. Bruns Enterprises has, and Mythic Paint out of Mississippi has free shipping, and I ordered a sample from them. They have 1,232 colors.
Wow.
If you can't find a color from Mythic Paint, made in America, you're not going to find it.
I agree with you.
I just don't get it why people are not buying made in America, because so many of the companies are in fact offering free shipping, and their products are a lot better than what you even find in JCPenney's.
Yeah. Well, we got to make it our mission. That's definitely one of mine. We've had some people on, and I'm going to continue to try to press that button even more. Yeah.
Take care, y'all.
All right. Thanks, Izzy. You too. Yeah, she's right. Boy, you just dig, and you don't have to even dig. As she was saying, you just scrape a little bit off the surface, Izzy was saying, but you've got to be able to find them, and you got to be able to do it, and they're there. We're going to start to list some of that on the website, and we've had people, there's a website called Made in America. We've had him on several times, the guy who's behind the website, and the stuff that he's been able to find. All right, what are you doing for New Year's is the big question. Izzy says forget it. She can't deal with drunks. She had something personal that she had to deal with because of a drunk. And I feel the same way. It's, boy, and I just hope anybody who's out there just partying it up, bravo to go and party. I think if you want to cut loose, you should. But just, gosh, be responsible. Please. Give someone your keys. Get a designated driver. It's not that difficult. I tell you, I would do it no matter what. I would leave a car somewhere, get a ride, get a cab, whatever. I would not risk what could happen if I foolishly try to drive and I was in some situation where I was altered like that. So be safe and have fun that way versus trying to risk it and play chicken with your life and who knows who else may be affected by that. All right, Mayor Bloomberg talked about excitement in New York over Lady Gaga. Take a listen.
I have never met Lady Gaga. I saw her once perform at the Metropolitan Museum, where I thought she was a great entertainer. We do have limited resources. And even though we're going through some tough times and having to do more with less, something that would be true in 2012 as well, we've always found ways to continue to make our city safer, and we're going to continue to do that.
All right. Thank you, Michael Bloomberg. I don't agree with very much that Bloomberg says, but I would agree with that. Anything they can do to make that city safer, and it, having just been there not too long ago, I thought it was pretty safe, and the people were actually pretty friendly. There's this misnomer that the people in New York are nasty and aren't very helpful, but that's not true at all. I guess it's true anywhere, whether you're in the South, the West, the Southwest, Midwest. It depends probably on your attitude is what I think might be the cause for some people feeling like they're getting the brush off. All right, there were some people that we said goodbye to in 2011, including Elizabeth Taylor, who was a movie star for a very long time. And Elizabeth Taylor passes away at 79 years old. She had been dealing with a lot of different things that were wrong with her lately. And you think of the movies that she made and for how many decades Liz Taylor was around. How many husbands did Liz Taylor have? Amy Winehouse, much too young, just 27 years old, singer-songwriter. I think she was talented. I think she had written some really good stuff. And, of course, drugs, drinking, her downfall, without a doubt. Something that would have made Betty Ford sad, because Betty Ford publicly dealt with alcoholism, among other things, in a battle with cancer, too. And the first lady, former first lady, lived to be 93 years old before her death. Another death of somebody that you might have seen if you were a fan of Taxi at all, or maybe you watched the Jim Carrey movie where they had the actors from Taxi playing themselves, Jeff Conway. Conway was in that. He died at the age of 60. He was another one who had problems with substance abuse, and he was pretty popular on that show and had done some others as well. Probably one of the biggest deaths happened toward the end of the year, and that would be Steve Jobs, who died at the age of 56. I've talked about it already before. Technology-wise, he was in a lane of his own. He came up with the ideas. He wasn't so much the engineer. He was the designer. He was the idea guy, and he was the idea guy that changed forever the world. He'll be a historic figure that people will read about for a long, long, long time to come. Steve Jobs knew, and he tried to battle it, but he knew that he was going to lose his battle with cancer. And there's an excellent biography out about Steve Jobs to get a handle on all the things that he did. Jane Russell in her day was the sexy siren, dead at the age of 89 this year. If you go back and you look at those old pics of her, she really, truly was a bombshell. I said this before, Jack LaLanne lived down the street from me when I lived in Morro Bay, California. He lived to be 96, and I saw him, you know, maybe 7 years ago, and boy, was he in incredible shape. He believed in working out and juicing. He was big into the whole juice thing. Andy Rooney dies at the age of 92, shortly after officially retiring from 60 Minutes. There's a guy who worked his entire life and loved to write. Surely there were some others, too, as well, that we didn't mention. Names you would know, like Eleanor Mondale, who died at 53, I want to say she was. She was a radio host in Minnesota and Minneapolis. Geraldine Ferraro, the first woman to run as VP. She died at 75 years old. Stay with us.
Introducing a diabetes breakthrough, an easy, natural, organic way to bring relief to diabetics. Introducing MDS Forte, a concentrated super strength extract formulated for those who are looking for relief. What can MDS Forte do for you? MDS Forte reduces glucose levels safely and effectively, reduces cholesterol and triglyceride levels, increases HDL or good cholesterol while reducing LDL or bad cholesterol. MDS Forte reduces A1C, improves eyesight and circulation to the limbs, and helps with weight loss. Is non-toxic, caffeine-free, 100% natural, 100% organic, and comes with a 100% money-back guarantee. Waiting for the side effects disclaimers? With MDS Forte, there are none. Order a 25-day treatment of MDS Forte by calling 213-405-5355, 213-405-5355, or visit bestbloodsupport.com. That's bestbloodsupport.com for MDS Forte, a diabetes breakthrough.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
That's the sound of your door being kicked in by an intruder with a single kick. That's the sound of the same door now protected by the Door Sentinel at MySafeDoor.com. Go to MySafeDoor.com right now and watch the amazing video. At MySafeDoor.com, you'll learn how to turn your home into a fortress with the Door Sentinel. 16 kicks later... and the Door Sentinel is still holding strong. MySafeDoor.com. That's MySafeDoor.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Smokers, are you still smoking traditional cigarettes? Are you still smelling up your clothes and car interior, staining your teeth, and getting ashes everywhere? Why, when you could be smoking or vaping with e-cigarettes by LeCig. With LeCig e-cigarettes' revolutionary microelectronic technology, rechargeable battery, and unique replacement cartridges, you'll get all the satisfaction of smoking, but no smoking hazards. Choose from a wide variety of our new American-made Vapriate e-liquid flavors at LeCig.com, spelled L-E-C-I-G.com, or call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. LeCig e-cigarettes for today's modern smoker. Warning: e-cigs may contain nicotine, an addictive substance known to the state of California to cause birth defects or cancer. Please be aware of the risks associated with e-cigs prior to use. You must be 18 years or older to purchase.
Fight back this cold and flu season with the world's best garlic extract, Alley C. Why Alley C? Because it helps your body fight viruses, bacteria, and fungi. Alley C has been scientifically proven in double-blind studies using low doses to greatly reduce the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Alley C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin, the active ingredient in crushed garlic. Studies show Alley C is effective against MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections. One tablet of Alley C has the equivalent of 40 cloves of garlic. Alley C supports your body's resistance to all types of conditions and can help lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So boost your body's resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Alley C. For more information and to order Alley C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 1-877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com for your Alley C today.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. In this week's edition of For Your Health, here come the generics. That's right. Did you know in the next 14 months or so, seven of the world's best-selling drugs, and we're including Lipitor and Plavix, will get some serious competition with the explosion of the generics and the expiration dates set on those patents for drugs like Lipitor and Plavix, as I mentioned. So what happens now? What does that mean? The cost goes down for the patients and the companies, but what does it all mean to you and to me? It's a very big pleasure to welcome to the show Dr. Mitchell Brooks. Doc, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, Kate. You?
I'm good, thank you. And, you know, you're a doctor, but the main one of the main things I think that people, for some reason in this country, I don't know if we just don't get it or we're just a little lazy or what it is, but why don't people take the responsibility for their health, like their weight and all those other factors? Why don't they put it on their own shoulders? I don't understand that. You're a doctor, so you've seen this, I'm sure, over the years. And have you seen the way people take care of themselves deteriorate?
Yeah, I think people take care of themselves like a rental car, you know? I mean, there's no personal responsibility. And the answer to your question, I think, is really simple. They have no skin in the game. It doesn't cost them anything. Most people think that because they have insurance that they pay a copay and that's all they have to worry about. That's not in fact the case, but that's perception, and as you know, perception is reality. And because people really don't have noticeable skin in the game, there's no incentive for them to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I agree with you, by the way. And looking at what's going on now, too, with the generics, as we sort of go in that direction here, that's what some people are saying. Wow, you know, now I'm going to be able to pay a lot less, so give me the generics.
But what happens when a better drug comes along that has less side effects? You know, Lipitor has a substantial amount of side effect, not the least of which is muscle cramping. And the muscle cramping can be pretty severe. And I'm sure that if you ask 10 or 15 people who take Lipitor, 4 or 5 of them have muscle cramping with which they put up. But down the road with the new genome, with our ability to decipher the genome, there are going to be better and better drugs that are coming out. And these drugs that are now generic will be supplanted by better drugs and drugs that will not be generic. So it's kind of like this ongoing vicious cycle.
Yeah, and the ongoing vicious cycle is about profits for the drug companies, isn't it?
Well, sure, that's part of it. I mean, but I think, to be fair, it's easy to beat up the drug companies, and it's easy to say, oh, well, they don't have a right to make a profit. But if we really are honest and take a look at the drug companies, you know, they invest nearly $70 billion in drug development. And think about the number of jobs that they provide. Mm. And the United States government, through the Federal Drug Administration, makes the development of those drugs burdensome and onerous. And there's a tremendous amount of paperwork involved, a tremendous amount of administrative costs, so that the cost to bring a new drug to the market in the United States is substantially more than bringing a drug to the market in other countries. And I'm not speaking for the drug companies, but I am speaking for fairness and to look at things that are not as simple as they first may seem. And if you're a shareholder in a drug company, I'm sure you certainly have that bent. So it's just not as easy as it seems. And not only that, as Americans, we want the newest, the latest, and the greatest. And that doesn't come without a cost. So,
oh, yeah, no kidding. You and I were talking about this actually earlier in the day before you jumped on for the interview. We were talking about Canada, and we have a lot of people listening to us in Canada all over the place, including in Montreal. Sam in Montreal calls us a lot. We have Alan Canada calls us and a slew of other people. And they would say this, Doc, that their healthcare system isn't so great. This whole push about, gee, what's wrong with the healthcare system? Shouldn't it be more like Canada or Europe, what you're seeing in England? And you made, in your comments to me, and you were dead on, you talked about the population. I mean, really, you're talking about 37 million versus how many? 310 million in the United States? And there's no comparing that.
Well, it's not even the numbers. You're talking about the kind of society as well. I mean, I lived in Canada for 13 years, and I did my medical school, and I was a family practitioner in Ontario for 3 years. So I know a little bit about what I'm speaking. And I will say to you that if you're going to talk about Canada, firstly, there are only 37 million people, number one. Number two, it's a society that believes in a strong central government as opposed to the rights of the individual, whereas we are a society that believes more in individual rights and states' rights than we do in a strong central government. And the Canadian society is, by and large, not a violent society. When I trained in Canada, if we saw one gunshot wound or two gunshot wounds a year in Toronto, which is now a city of, what, 6-7 million people, it was a lot. If you don't see one or two gunshot wounds in a half a day in New York City, then, you know, you're either unconscious or you're not doing your job. So we have – our problems are much more complex. Our society is much more diverse, and we're taking care of 310 million people. And so I think that when Canadians start talking about their healthcare system being superior, they need to start defining what they mean by superior. And then if we're talking about drugs – then if we talk about Canada and Great Britain, and I taught in Great Britain, and I've operated there, and if you're talking about those societies, in addition to France and Germany and the other socialized healthcare systems of the West, they take our research and development that we, the American taxpayer, support and we fund, and they get the drugs at considerably less cost than we do. And in order to make the profits, that the drug companies have to make to warrant the research and development that they spend, they cost shift back on to us. So not only are we paying for the research and development that is keeping the Europeans and the Canadians in the best and latest and greatest drugs, but we're also bearing the cost of it on the other end. So we're getting it both ways. So something has to be done about that as well. And I think the United States government probably needs to stand pretty firm next to the drug companies and say, no, we're not going to sell these drugs to you at a substantially discounted price. We're going to sell them to our people at the same price we're going to sell to you. And if you infringe on our patents, then we're going to do what we need to do internationally, and we're going to take you to court, and we're going to do whatever is within our power as a country to do to prevent it. The mortality rates for cancer in Canada and Great Britain are high enough as it is. They don't need them to be any higher, and the productivity loss that would go along with loss of some of the better drugs and the more modern drugs would also impact their economy even more than it does in any case. So those are all issues that need to be considered.
Yeah, I agree with you. There was something that I read today about the Supreme Court, a Supreme Court ruling, and this was actually a little while ago, on pharmaceuticals, on the safety warnings. And it all centered around generics. It centered around the labels and whether or not a generic drug company could be sued for failing to actually strengthen its warning label beyond, you know, what they have beyond the branded versions. And what happened with the ruling, actually, it was a reversal saying, you know, that they upended it, as I mentioned. So that changes a lot of things as far as generics are concerned. And there's a worry among some doctors that the warnings won't be strong enough. What do you make of that?
Well, we do know, for instance, that there are certain drugs that we really don't want our patients taking that are generic. This we know. For instance, if you take the blood thinner Coumadin, we want people to take the brand name Coumadin. Warfarin is not as effective as Coumadin. That's been shown. If you're on an anti-rejection drug, if you have a transplant, there's a drug called Neoral. And we don't want people not taking Neoral. We know that the generic is not as effective. What you need to look for in a generic is that the generic is made in a factory that is an FDA-approved factory. Most people don't know that all of Lipitor is not made. There's no Lipitor made in the United States. I think most of it is made in Ireland, I believe. Mm. I don't quote me on that, but I believe that's the case. But those factories are all FDA-approved factories. And the same in most of the Western European countries, in Australia, in Canada. And in point of fact, the online pharmacies that people go to in the Bahamas or in the Caribbean, they are Canadian pharmacies. And they import drugs from factories in Europe that are FDA-approved factories, and all the drugs are sealed. You run into trouble when you get generics that are made in China or made in India, where you're not quite sure what's going into the drug. And I would probably include Mexico in that as well. So, I think it's important to be careful. It's important to consult your physician. Most doctors will be up on this kind of thing, and most doctors should know which generics are appropriate and which aren't.
Yeah, because certainly after what you just said, I'm sure some ears are perking up around the nation right now where they're just not thinking about that.
Well, you know, if you bite into some Lipitor and you get a piece of chicken beak, it's not really a good sign.
No kidding.
Probably not.
Dr. Mitchell Brooks, medical expert, we enjoyed the conversation. Will you come back on with us?
I'd be delighted to. Anytime you want to invite me, I'm delighted to accommodate you. You're a pleasant host.
Great. We'll do it again. Thanks so much.
Ma'am.
Wow. Warning, the unprepared may not survive the next natural disaster, terrorist attack, pandemic, or economic collapse. In light of recent global unrest and natural disasters, we bring you this urgent message from David Morris, author of the acclaimed Urban Survival Course. Because this message is urgent, we won't waste time on the why you should act now. You already know why. It's the very real and growing dangers reported in the media every day. Now it's the what you must do. Go to freesurvivalminicourse.com and claim your free Urban Survival Mini Course that will prepare you right in your own home. Today, David Morris is offering you instant access to a 7-part Urban Survival Mini Course at freesurvivalminicourse.com. You should already be at your keyboard. Enough talk. Act now while you still have time and while it's still free. freesurvivalminicourse.com, freesurvivalminicourse.com, or call 800-366-5138, 800-366-5138. You'll be glad you did.
Iodine protection packs from hempusa.org are now in stock for immediate delivery worldwide. Our iodine protection packs include microplant powder, green life kelp, red palm oil, and our clear roll-on iodine that will feed the body the iodine it needs. All iodine protection packs are in stock. Save you money and ship for free in all 50 states. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. That bears repeating. Digestive health is the key to wellness and elimination of toxins. And Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse is the key to digestive health. Pro-EM-1 is a powerful liquid probiotic, strong enough to cleanse, gentle enough to use every day. Pro-EM-1 is dairy, wheat, and soy free, contains all natural and certified organic ingredients, contains no preservatives or animal products, supports a healthy digestive and immune system, supports weight loss, improves absorption of food nutrients, aids in controlling yeast infections, is never freeze-dried, and uses three groups of live, viable, beneficial microbes to cleanse and remove toxins. Order Pro-EM-1 Daily Probiotic Cleanse at Terraganics.com, spelled TerraGanix.com, Terraganics.com. Or call toll-free 866-369-3678. That's 866-369-3678. Pro-EM-1, the raw probiotic.
America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast, all those nooks and crannies in between. We've been talking about this all week. We did the pregame on Afghanistan, and of course now we know the meat of it after the president spoke the other night. Now what's happened is some of the top military brass have told Congress that President Obama's withdrawal of 33,000 surge troops from Afghanistan by next summer is more aggressive than the Pentagon initially proposed. But there were defenders like Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and General David Petraeus, of course, who say that it was right on what the president declared, and they're going to carry out the president's orders. Joining us on the show to talk about that, actually, to look at the history of Afghanistan, in a sense, from a historical perspective, Dr. Jeff Warrow, who's the director of the University of North Texas' Military History Center. You can also catch him on a couple of things. He recently filmed an episode of Spike TV's The Deadliest Warrior. He's the host and anchor of the History Channel and History International programs, Global View, for example. Hey, Jeff, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Hey, Kate, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, let's dive right into this. Give us your perspective on what has happened, because a lot of people are trying to compare what's, and we have too, comparing what happened with Russia and the 9 years in Afghanistan to now. We've way surpassed that by being invested in Afghanistan for 10 years. But there are definitely differences between the two. What are the major differences between what happened with Russia and what's going on with the United States?
Well, I think that, you know, we've invested more in the civil society than they ever did, but it remains to be seen whether that investment will pay off. I mean, recent research on this, and revelations of the press reveal that, a lot of the money we're spending is very analogous to what we did in Vietnam. We're using contractors and we're kind of bypassing the, as we bypass the Vietnamese people at that time, we're bypassing the Afghans and using foreign contractors to do a lot of this, civil society development. And so we may be leaving an untrained, demoralized rump behind rather than a society that's really pulled together under, with the benefit of American and NATO largesse. And so we've done a better job sort of building up the economy and society than the Soviets ever did. And then in our military, operations, we've really pursued a true counterinsurgency, which is quite humane compared to what they did. I mean, they were just going in and, killing bad guys however they could, which involved a lot of collateral damage, far more than we're inflicting. So there are big differences there. But I would say that I'm pretty pessimistic about the long-term thing. I think that it looks a lot like the Soviet experience. Remember, they had a couple of puppets there. The last one was this guy, Najibullah.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were leaving Afghanistan, when Gorbachev said, look, this is too expensive, it's gone on too long, we need to get out, he set up Najibullah much the way we're setting up Karzai, said, look, just pull the society together, bring in dissident elements, the Mujahideen, just as we're saying, try to bring in the Taliban and make some sort of broad coalition. And, he tried, but he was ultimately overcome by events. The warlords, the Mujahideen, they all, the minute they saw the Soviets were leaving, they were emboldened. And they said, look, we don't need to cut a deal with this guy. We'll just wait till the Soviets leave, and then we're just going to push this guy over and take power ourselves. And that's precisely what happened. So I see, barring some miraculous renaissance in the ranks of the Afghan security forces, which could happen. I mean, we've built them up to a strength of 100,000 now and 300,000 by the time we leave. Maybe they'll be halfway competent, but the results haven't been good. That said, remember, this is a very territorial society. People, they're not going to be pushed over necessarily by the Taliban. I mean, they realize they've got rights to protect. They've got interests to protect. So they're going to defend these interests with all these NATO-provided weapons once we leave. So I'm pessimistic, but I think there's still hope, but not from the nation-building perspective, just from the raw human interest perspective. Some of these guys we're leaving behind are going to want to defend their privileges and perquisites, and that may be enough to, protect a non-Taliban Afghanistan.
Yeah. The other aspect of that is what we leave behind. How about the Karzai government, though? I mean, certainly you realize this. I think it's propped up by, riddled with corruption, I guess is a better way to say that, and nepotism that has bit Hamid Karzai in the butt, so to speak. And certainly they have a limited ability, I think, also to win over the people in those war zones. But there is no better alternative, right? Is that what we're stuck with?
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be the best horse in the stall. I mean, we've invested so much in him from the George W. Bush administration to the Obama administration. It'd be impossible to do a course correction now, especially remember the experience of Vietnam when we threw over Diem and embraced the colonels, and we saw where that led us. So, it's like we kind of have to stick with them at this point, particularly given the accelerated withdrawal timetable. It's a question now of, just kind of talking to this guy, hoping for the best, talking to the men around him, trying to make sure that the police and the army are trained up and determined to protect what we've built in the last 10 years. So no, we're kind of stuck with him, and he's stuck with us until 2014.
Yeah, I was talking about this on our previous show. I dug up an old quote from Henry Kissinger, who famously said that in an insurgency of this kind, it's really the guerrilla army that wins by not losing, and it's the conventional army that loses by not winning. Do you think that's true here?
Yeah, I do think that's true. I mean, I think that what's happening now is that they see the timetable and they're going to sort of wait us out. Now, this is the but this implies no criticism of Obama. I mean, Obama, he can't stay in Afghanistan, through 2020 or 2030. I mean, at some point we have to leave. We're spending $20 billion a month in that godforsaken country. So he has to get out. And in fact, I would be in favor of a faster withdrawal than he's doing right now, like most Americans. But I think, so their idea is going to be to wait. Now, the only criticism I've heard there that I think is somewhat fair is by leaving getting the surge troops out in the summer of 2012, we're going to sort of nip the prime fighting season in the bud, because we'll be focused on drawing down the force at the time when we ought to be fighting the Taliban, who would be coming out of their, winter quarters and fighting in the spring and the summer. But, he obviously wants the surge troops out before the 2012 election, and he wants the whole lot out by 2014. I think that's reasonable to expect. I mean, this is plenty of time, plenty of investment, and we've got the NATO armies that are trying to get out at the same time, so we're not going to be the last ones in there. And we really need to be, tending to domestic issues, but also sort of thinking about our strategic, picture, all over the globe, and where do we want to spend our defense dollars? And it's probably not on mud walled villages in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I agree. How do you think this goes down in the history books? You're a history guy. How does this look 20 years from now?
Well, it looks like an example, I think, of American overreach. I think if we had to do this all over again, we would never have gone into Iraq to topple Saddam Hussein. I think most everyone would agree on that now. And as for Afghanistan, yes, we needed to go in and punish the Taliban for harboring Osama bin Laden and not giving him up. But I think a more focused strategy on counterterrorism, such as, yielded to capture of Osama bin Laden, it would have been a better investment of American dollars than this attempt to knock over the Taliban and stand up a new government under Hamid Karzai and create some model society. We've obviously backed away from that recently, but we're still sort of stuck with this idea of a new nation fostered with American aid. And I think that looking back 20 years hence, we're going to look back and say, why didn't we just go in and fight with the Northern Alliance like we did, knock over the Taliban, and then, align ourselves with the winners of that conflict, leave bases there, CIA and military bases, to look for the bad guys across the border in Pakistan, because that's where they all are. And, ultimately, this whole thing is not about Afghanistan. This whole thing is about Pakistan.
Right.
And managing the duplicity of Pakistan and the bad choices Pakistan's making, harboring terrorist groups, building up their nuclear arsenal, being obsessively paranoid about India when India is such a big mammoth country, the next China. They really don't care about Pakistan anymore, but the Pakistanis are so obsessed with the Indian threat, they'll do anything, including, harboring all these terrorist groups inside their borders, creating mayhem inside Afghanistan, building up a nuclear program in very dangerous ways. And I think really why we're staying on in Afghanistan until 2014 is far more to police Pakistan than to manage the development of Afghanistan.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. A perfect way to sum this up. Dr. Jeffrey Warrow, thanks so much for lending us your insights on Afghanistan from the historical side. We appreciate it.